Welcome to Conservation Connection, the show where we do exactly what it sounds like. We connect you with people working in the field of conservation. This week is actually a really fun episode because we are here live at EarthX, and we have Crystal DiMicelli on the show with us. We're super excited to do like a crossover episode, one of our first, I think, actually. So Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you guys.
This is super fun because we don't usually get to hang out with other podcasters. You were telling me this earlier that like we're all kind of in our own rooms talking into a microphone by ourselves. So to get to do it together in one room is super fun.
Yeah. And especially for me because I do everything virtual. All my interviews are virtual. So it's through a screen and I am literally alone in the room doing my interviews. So it's a whole different experience that I'm having here at EarthX being live with everybody.
That's fantastic. So for Conservation Connection listeners, Crystal is the host of Forces for Nature, and she's also the host of the Healthy Seas podcasts, two amazing shows that you should definitely go check out. She's a friend of ours and a podcaster, and she does really cool stuff. So that's a big part of why we wanted to sit down and talk with you, is because I just really like what you do.
Thank you. And I love what you guys do. I mean, I come from like the wildlife conservation world, environmental education world. And so I love that there are shows out there that are connecting people with conservation.
Speaking of which, tell us more about your show.
So my first show is called Forces for Nature. I created it in response to feeling the need for hope and optimism. In the conservation world, there tends to be just so much doom and gloom, and you feel like it's hopeless and why go on? And so, well, I could take an even further step back in talking about optimism. When I was working for the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, Smithsonian in general that year was having this event called the Earth Optimism Event. And it was the brainchild of Dr. Nancy Knowlton. And in her experience as this renowned ocean biologist, she was one of the givers of all that gloom and doom. But she said herself that she was getting tired of reading the ocean's obituary. And so she started changing her narrative to one more of solutions and optimism and hope. And she saw a drastic difference in how people responded to that. And she ran with it to the point where Smithsonian created this entire event around Earth optimism. And so I was charged with bringing that event to Panama. And I started noticing it myself because the doom and gloom narrative, even though I myself was pushing it, it wasn't making me feel good or, you know, motivated to act. And so once I started paying attention to the solutions and the hope in the crises that we're facing, it just motivates you more. And so that's a very long-winded answer to why I started the show, but it was almost for my own selfish reasons of trying to find the hope and learning what solutions are out there.
Absolutely. And we actually interviewed Molly Kawahata at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. And she really pushes hope and that narrative. And she gave a great example of, you know, if you run into a room and tell someone like, hey, there's this fire and everything's burning and there's nothing we can do. Do you want to help me try to put it out? It's like, no, because you just said there's nothing we can do. Right. But if you run into a room and you're like, hey, like there's this fire, but you know, there's still time for us to fix it. Do you want to help me fix it? Then the person you're talking to is more likely to be like, yeah, okay, how can I help you? So it's so true. And I feel like something that's kind of recently coming into focus, you know, even like you said, always reading the obituary of the planet, but then realizing, hey, this isn't working. How do we change this narrative? So I love to see that more people are focusing on that message of hope.
I think it's more motivating and you don't want to go hide in a corner and just curl up into a ball as much.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think everybody in this field has those days where it's like, does what I do matter? Am I making a difference? And it's paralyzing, right? And so focusing on that truly does not, if the goal is solve the problem, focusing on the problem is not achieving the goal. You have to focus on the solutions. You have to focus on what is working. And fear-mongering and doom and gloom paralyzes people. But hopeful messages invigorate people. And, you know, it's carrot versus stick, right? Yeah. So we want to be the carrot. The carrot is what really motivates people to stay with something long term. The stick is just, we're going to avoid that until you stop swinging the stick. But the carrot is like, oh, I want to keep doing this, you know?
And the great news is that the solutions are out there. We have all, I mean, obviously we need as many solutions, more and new solutions, but we have so many solutions now that can reverse so many of the issues that we're facing. It's really exciting.
Yeah. And so, you know, we were kind of like approaching the finish line, right? We've done so much work to develop these solutions. Now we just need adoption. We need people to know that they're there,
yeah,
care about it, and, you know, make those changes. And, I would imagine that everybody who's listening to Conservation Connection and Forces for Nature are already the people that are making those changes. So I, you know, I just wanted to say to the half of the audience here that I don't ever get to talk to, thanks for being awesome and for, you know, being people who care about the planet, because
they are awesome.
You're the ones that are actually making huge changes. So yeah, that's great.
Speaking of which, EarthX is such a cool conference to be at to see all of those solutions from different sides of everywhere. Honestly, yes. We have such a diverse group of people here. So this being your first time here at EarthX, what are kind of your first impressions? I know you've gotten thrown into something a little bit crazy and wild.
Truthfully, when I first learned about EarthX, I was wondering if this was the place for me, because I was afraid there'd be just latent greenwashing. The chemical industry is here and the petroleum industry is here, and so many people that I don't necessarily agree with are here. There is a band. There's a party going on outside. Yeah, I don't know.
There is. Can hear, I think it's, well, you know.
You may or may not be able to hear it.
If you're listening, EarthX is a party, and we're here doing serious work.
You should be
work.
Here next year.
Definitely. Do come next year, because as I was doing a lot of introspection and learning more about EarthX, all of the players that are here are important, because we do really all have the same desires at the end of the day. We want a healthy planet for ourselves, for our families, for our children. And so we all have this same end goal. We just have different ways of getting there.
I think that what you just said about all the players that are here are important is such a poignant idea, because so often we fall into this category of like, only the people on my side of it are right, and all the other side, we need to minimize their impact or their ability to do anything, right? That's kind of how we think about these things. That's not true, and it's not how things are going to ultimately be effective. Every player is important, and that means oil companies are important and need to have a seat at the table when we're talking about the future of the planet, right? If they're not there, the solutions that we come up with at that table will never get adopted, because they are such an important part of that conversation. They need to be at the table.
And they won't be as strong, I think, at the end of the day. Yes, they'll check all the boxes I want them to check, but they're not holistic. And really, if we want to make any progress in anything, we really need to be holistic and look at all sides.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were all sitting together hanging out this morning at the opening session for EarthX. And one of the things that they unveiled this year are what they're calling their four guiding principles for conversations happening at EarthX, where there is people from all aisles, different perspectives, sitting down to talk together. And I was really captured by those. So just like really quick to read them. The first one was no demons. See the human, be the human. Be your best and invite the best, right? So it's, if you don't see the person that you're talking to as a human, you will never care about their viewpoints, and they will never care about yours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're just looking at them as the enemy, you have no motivation to be like, oh, we can work together.
And they have no motivation to work with you, mm-hmm. if that's all you see them as, right? Mm-hmm. So no demons, no denial, which I loved. Embrace the truth. Know that it is complex, right? So I think it's very easy to, and I'm definitely guilty of being like, oh, that doesn't really fit how I wanted it to fit. So we're just going to ignore that inconvenient fact. But that's not how we work together, right? Yeah. You have to embrace the truth. But the other side of that is know that the truth is complex.
Yeah.
And that an inconvenient fact is still the truth and needs to be incorporated into this worldview so that we're not polarizing.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like saying, like, my way is the only way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not true. There are so many ways to get to the right solution and the solution where we need to be. And it's probably going to involve a few different ways.
Last week, I was at the Climate Reality Leadership Training that's led by Al Gore. And it's a fascinating training. It's so rich and you have so many takeaways. But what was really interesting and totally unexpected, at least by me, was that during the training, there was a protest. So John Podesta was on stage and a couple of climate activists started shouting at him and saying he's not doing enough. And, you know, they were very extreme. Then they started singing to be louder than them. And it was an interesting thing to see because I respect that. And I believe that they have a role in the movement. But at the end of the day, I wish fossil fuels were cut off immediately. But in reality, if fossil fuels were cut off today,
there would be a lot of problems.
There would be a lot of problems.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like even being at that conference, he was probably there like trying to talk about a way to move forward.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, he's working within some very tight boundaries. So for him to be able to make any progress and move forward, he has to talk to the other side. He has to have a give and take.
It's really funny because everybody sitting at this table has a background in animal husbandry. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we all know is that positive reinforcement is like the number one way to change behavior. And what that means is positive, I'm introducing something to your environment. Reinforcement, it's something that's going to encourage you to do that action again, right? So think of it like giving a treat to your dog when they sit, makes them want to sit more in the future. The opposite of that is punishment, positive punishment, introducing an unpleasant stimulus, like hitting your dog when they don't sit. Okay, that doesn't work. All it does is create all these avoidance behaviors where they're trying to get away from you or avoid situations where you're going to make them sit. So if you want to change behavior, you have to reward people when they come to the table. When,
I love that.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it boils down to very simple principles. It's just reinforce, reward the behavior that you want to see.
And it's not easy. I mean, it's very, very difficult when something's being done that you just don't agree with, but it's necessary. And something else they said this morning when they were talking about the new principles and guidelines, they brought up a data point saying that the extreme left and the extreme right are only, let's say, 15% of the population, maybe each 15%, but there's 70% of what they're calling the silent majority. So that means we have 70% of the population that we can work within to make the changes we want. It's just we need to learn how to be louder than the extreme 30%.
Yeah, and that's how it is, honestly, within anything controversial. You know, all you see is this is really important, this really matters, it should be this way. And then the other side saying, this is terrible, this is awful, this should not be this way. Where really the truth lies somewhere in between, honestly.
And it's because it doesn't make a good soundbite to be like, oh, I don't know, it's probably somewhere in between.
Yeah,
right. It doesn't encourage, it doesn't sell ad spots, it doesn't get people to show up for rallies.
Oh, and what they were talking about today was that the politicians, for example, actually get more money and donations when they use fear and these extreme positions, which is so disappointing to hear, even if they don't believe it themselves.
Right. And that's the other part of it, is that they also are trapped in this system where if they want to keep up, if they want to get elected and hold power, mm-hmm.
They have to have an extreme opinion.
They have to play the game. And so we're all constrained by the system. We're not trapped by it, but it is the game that we're playing right now. But we can break out of it by actively engaging sincerely and authentically with people who don't hold the same opinions and seeing them as human, not as a demon that's trying to take away your way of life, and just being willing to have a conversation with somebody who differs from you, which, I mean, you know, we all definitely fall further left on the spectrum than right. And one of the big important ideologies that we hear all the time is like, diversity is important, but not if they don't agree with me, you know, right? And so you have to walk that walk, right? You have to find people that you don't agree with and spend quality time with them. And you don't have to like them. You don't have to be friends with them, but you do have to be able to work together, because the world is made up of a lot of different types of people that all care about different things, and you have to work with them.
And really, if you have those open discussions and communications, you'll find that you're not that different.
Yes, that there's so much more. You align
on so much more. And I've noticed that. So I've lived outside of the U.S. now for over 10 years, and it's really interesting to get an international perspective of the U.S. and then like come back to the U.S. and talk to people, because I'm even starting to be like, I've been outside for so long that when I come back, I have these like preconceived notions, and I'm surprised when I sit down and have conversations with people who I assume are going to be completely different in their viewpoints, and like, no, we really are aligning and everything. And like, we share values. We just have different ways of executing them.
Yeah. I mean, I really sincerely believe that at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We just disagree on how to get there.
Yeah.
And if you can keep that in mind, it makes having conversations with quote unquote the other side of the aisle so much easier, because finding that common ground is so important. And I mean that in more than just the environmental movement. I mean that in basically every walk of life, every aspect of life is made so much more fun and so much better when you seek the common ground rather than seek the difference.
I did an interview earlier today with Jim Keyes, and he wrote a book about education and learning. And part of what he was talking about, he told me a story. He was just at a conservative conference, and he was saying, like, if he brought up the word diversity if he brought up DEI, they would have completely just shut down and not cared what he had to bring to the table and talk about. But in his book, he talks about cultural literacy. He just put a different term on the same thing, but they were completely open to it. So it's also framing and verbiage that we use that makes a difference.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely knowing the audience that you're talking to. We do science communication workshops with colleges and universities as well. And the whole goal of that is teaching these young researchers who have a certain project they're working on is, here's how you communicate it to someone who's not a scientist, to someone who doesn't understand your work and why it's important. How do you relate it to just a general public audience? And it's so important. Communication is just so important.
Side note, you should try to also bring that that workshop to places like the Smithsonian. Because when I was working in Panama, it was incredible to be surrounded by all these brilliant minds. And I learned about things I never knew about before. But yeah, they could use a little bit of training on how to connect it to people who are not scientists or have, you know, science backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we'll be emailing you, Smithsonian, if you're listening.
Yeah,
you should. Who we've actually had on the show before, the director. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually at EarthX 2019.
Okay.
He told us all about squirrels.
The squirrel room.
The room of squirrels, where there's just drawers and drawers and drawers of squirrel specimens at the museum.
Which, so scroll way back and you can find that episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of all of these interesting people, I do want to kind of talk about some of the episodes that we'll have coming up from EarthX. And I know being here live recording at EarthX will be a little bit different for you. So I want to talk about some of the people we have coming on, some of the people you have coming on.
So Crystal, who are some of the really cool people that you will be interviewing and will be releasing episodes with?
So I mentioned that I interviewed Jim Keyes, and that was a really interesting interview. We were able to talk about learning and how people have militant ignorance, which is being so set in what you think or what you think that you're not willing to take in other points of view, even if they could enrich your own point of view. So we talked about how perhaps conservationists and environmentalists could, as much as we think we're doing good, we can be militantly ignorant, I guess you can say.
I've caught myself today being like hearing somebody say something and starting to shut down and be like, no. The whole point today is to listen and like exercise those muscles.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I was starting to completely dismiss carbon capture as not a very viable, good option in climate change mitigation. So that is why I brought on Daniel Cardenas, because I wanted to hear from his perspective why it is. And so that is another interesting conversation that I had that this whole week. I want to talk to both sides of the aisle because I want to see, I want to know what I don't know and start to really accept other points of view. I want to practice what I preach.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the perfect place to do it, right? That's kind of the whole intention of EarthX, is to bring in people from literally every side of the aisle, every side in between the aisle, beside the aisle, whatever it is.
Anywhere in the stadium.
Yeah. Anywhere in the stadium, on the field, whatever. You really just kind of have your pick of all of these different opinions. And like we said, everyone's trying to get to the same place. It's just, how are we trying to do it? So this is a really cool place to do that.
Absolutely.
How about you guys? Who are you excited to talk to?
I'm going to go ahead and jump in here before you get to say it, because I'm so excited to announce that we got an interview with Dr. Sylvia Earle.
Oh my God, that's so amazing.
Right? I'm still a little like shaky about it.
Totally.
It was.
I wanted to hug her when I saw her. I was like, oh my God.
I know, right?
Sylvia Earle.
And that was, yeah, that was such a cool episode. Really, really cool interview. And I think we're actually going to be releasing that one pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously fantastic.
Yeah. So for any listeners who do not know who Dr. Sylvia Earle is, she's sometimes known as her deepness. That is because she is an avid diver. Her life basically consists of everything ocean and marine. She has such a history in this ocean field and has made so many amazing discoveries.
She was the first female chief scientist at NOAA in the 90s. She has been a National Geographic Explorer at large since 1998. I mean, she is truly, I throw this word around a lot, but she truly is one of the titans of ocean science. I mean, like chills, like literally goosebumps talking about her.
I asked her after the show if she still gets to dive as much as, to scuba dive as much as she would like to. And she said, she still gets to scuba dive, but not as much as she would like to these days. I know she's, I mean, she was just at a conference in Greece literally last week. So she's a very busy lady.
Yeah.
Yep. Who else did we get?
So we will also be interviewing Ivan Carter. He has a show on EarthX TV called Defenders of the Wild. I believe he has a few other shows, but we'll kind of be talking to him a little bit about that show and about his work in Africa, working with the communities there. You know, I think a lot of what we've heard in the past is you go into a place and you're like, hey, you're doing everything wrong. Here's how you can do it better, instead of truly working with that community. So a lot of his work now is working with communities, seeing the resources they have, the problems they have, and saying, okay, how can we work together to make this better for you? How can we bring you an income that serves your family, but also protects these amazing animals that are very well known in Africa. So that'll be a really cool episode.
I didn't know that about him. I want to talk to him now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You totally should. That.
Side note, my husband's also in this field generally, but he's always talking about the colonialist approach to conservation because he's worked with indigenous groups throughout Panama, Central and South America. And it's so wonderful to know that Ivan is taking that approach and actually working with the local people rather than telling them the way it should be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to introduce you to Vance Martin is here. He is the founder of Wild. And he has a couple other projects going on now. We've had him on the show a couple of times previously, but he does a lot of similar work. And I know he'll be here this year. So we should definitely see if we can get him on your show because he's a really awesome guy.
Yeah, super sweet guy. Great interview. Yeah, he'd be awesome.
Great. And I can't wait to listen to the episodes that you guys are going to have coming out because they're just going to complement what I have coming out. There's just so many people here and we're going to be able to cover like so much ground. And I'm really excited to be working with you guys this week.
Yeah, we're excited too. I think hopefully some of our audience, maybe some of our audience overlaps now, but if not, hopefully even more overlap after these episodes come out. And we'll have some really cool stories to share. So thank you so much for joining us for this chat, Crystal.
Thank you.
And if you listen to Conservation Connection, you should definitely be listening to Forces for Nature. If you listen to Forces for Nature, I really hope you'll come check out our show. I think you might enjoy it.
I totally agree. You would enjoy it. I've listened to a few of your episodes and they've been great so far.
Yay.
Look at all the love in this room right now. Isn't that great? Awesome.
See you next week.